Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning, and God, can you imagine what this week's going to be like? If you've been buried under the heat for quite a while, it's going to be dramatic. It's going to be big. It's going to be a real cool down. I'm talking about, you know, we get 50 degrees, 50-something degrees in Mobile in September is an unusual thing. That's a nice thing. I hope a lot of you are ready for it. I have tried to cajole you. I have nudged you. I have prodded you. I put the cattle dogs after you. And I hope you were aware that you needed to have your plants ready to go in the ground here at the end of September. It's that time of year. A lot of things happening. This is the big time for planting. We don't always have this big a cool down. We almost always have some cool down. This is a big one, and it's going to make a great difference for the plants you plant. You know, you're going to have, it's going to be a great year for cabbage, potentially. Great year for broccoli. Great time to go ahead and put your broccoli out. Great time to sow your seeds directly. Go ahead. You know, you could have done this earlier, but it's not too late to sow your radish seeds. It's not too late to sow things like broccoli rabe. There are a whole bunch of things you can be doing right now in your garden to take advantage of this cool spell, which is going to last a while. And maybe even if it's not in the 50s, it's going to make a ton of difference in how your plants perform. And it's also going to be a signal to a lot of the bugs that it's time to move on. So I think we might see a decline in bugs. There's even that possibility. Not in some of the worst ones, I agree, but in many of them. Satsumas are going to be great. All these wonderful things are going to happen because it's going to be really cool for a long period of time. You know, you may even see a real revival in tomatoes. This is not bad timing. You'll see a lot more fruit set. Probably already seen good fruit set. Good development now. They'll be do just fine through these temperatures. They're kind of perfect for your tomatoes to develop. And you may, if we have enough year left, and a lot of us will, I expect, if we have enough year left into mid-November, late November, we'll be ripening some really neat tomatoes. Good tomatoes, good peppers. The eggplants are going to keep going. It's going to be a nice time of year. It's really one of the great times of year along the Gulf Coast. Welcome to a really beautiful Gulf Coast hurricane summer. This is the way hurricane summers are supposed to work. They do work this way. We had some hurricanes, however. And in a way, that's the way you know the hurricane summers are going to work. They're always that way. There are always going to be hurricanes. There may be a few more. If we're ready, we're in pretty good shape. But one of the things we're going to talk about today is being ready. And we talk about it a lot, and I'm sorry. I just feel like I need to do it. And here's the reason why. A lot of you, and I've warned you, are going to be facing, I don't know how to put it, and I'm trying to be nice to everybody, but you're going to just face terrible problems with your insurers. And they're going to be balking at everything. You got a lot of repairs. The price of wood right now is out of the roof, unbelievably high. Repairs are going to be expensive. It's going to be hard to find people to do the repairs. It's going to be a tough time. But one thing I want us to remember, and it's why I harp on this all the time, because it is such an impediment to life along the Gulf Coast and throughout Alabama. And we could be doing really fun things like planting broccoli right now. We could be talking just about that. But listen, we need to talk about this situation because it really is going to curb your enjoyment of life along the Gulf Coast if you're not prepared for the fact that we have hurricane summer every year and we will always have some tropical storms and hurricanes, and right now the intensity may be greater. And so what do we do to prepare? And it, again, I go over, this is not about making sure you have bottled water. That's another thing. That's great. That's wonderful. You need to do that. It's not about making sure you have canned goods or sardines or whatever it is you're going to eat. It's not about going to get the gas for the generator. It's about the fact that what costs most people who don't live in surge zones, what costs most people is the damage to their houses and the damage to particularly to their houses from trees that are around their houses. Now, I will tell you that those houses are mostly undamaged in many ways because of the trees. The trees are protecting those houses. I always have to remind you, it makes a huge difference. It's why my persimmons are still hanging on the tree after this hurricane, because of the trees surrounding it. They buffer those houses in incredible ways. But there is the other factor that vulnerable trees, trees that are vulnerable, trees that have pre-existing conditions, trees that we probably should be cautious about planting next to our houses, or letting grow next to our houses, because most of us don't actually plant the trees in our yard. We just let whatever is there happen. Because we don't do that, the bills that we will face as a result of hurricanes are gigantic, in the hundreds of millions and billions of dollars because of trees. Your insurer is not going to help you on this, and I wish they would. I don't know of an insurer that really does in any significant way. If there's any insurer out there who does that, you let me know. But the fact of the matter is the insurer is probably not going to help you anyway for the most part. They can be very tough. They are really trying to control their costs on these hurricanes because it's getting expensive for them. What are you going to do? Let's talk about trees today, and I really want to talk about that. One of the things that you've heard, one of the things you might have heard lately, because people like to make people like to enjoy making nonsense because it helps to sell whatever it is they're doing. But you probably heard a little bit about what's happening at Bienville Square. And Bienville Square is an interesting place, and I want to talk a little bit about it because, yeah, you know, it got hit pretty hard. It got hit pretty hard. And we're going to talk a lot about that this morning. Peter Toler is going to come on. We're going to talk more about it when he gets on. Chris France is going to come on. We're going to talk about Bienville Square and what it means for your yard, because it tells us a lot about what can happen in your yard and what probably did happen in your yard. The other issue is what Bienville tells us about our streets and about so much of what's going on in our streets, in these Gulf Coast cities and throughout Alabama. And I will tell you that Bienville happened, Bienville Square happened, because, to use a term that you're hearing a lot in a different context, because of pre-existing conditions. Hurricanes can do damage, and they will do damage, and they would have done some damage in Bienville because the winds around those buildings, as Peter points out, are really stiff. But the winds around those buildings are always stiff. I mean, it's just something we have to live with. It's part of it. There's always going to be some damage to trees like that, to trees all over the city. But the extent of damage in Bienville, you really have to understand that that is a symptom of how we neglect our trees. And there is a sense in Mobile that the trees take care of themselves and that we can put a tree anywhere we want and not worry about it because the trees will figure it out. Well, Bienville is a classic case. I mean, it should tell you, please look at what happened at Bienville, because trees don't figure it out, because they can't figure it out. They can't get around some of the problems we create for trees in Mobile and elsewhere in all of our cities along the Gulf Coast and really even throughout Alabama. And so what happens is the trees don't have any roots in the ground. They don't have enough roots to support themselves, so they blow over. And the reason they don't have roots on the ground? Well, look at all the concrete. And look at the carelessness with which over the years we have poured concrete around these trees. look at, and there's probably smart ways of doing that. Look at the compaction. Look at the other issues. Hey, look at the squirrels. I know you think that's funny, but I'm going to tell you about it. It's an interesting thing. Hey, we're going to be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Moving to the country, I'm going to eat a lot of peaches. Yeah, all right, that's enough. We've heard from you. Hey, listen, we're back. We got a lot to talk about this morning. A lot of fun stuff to talk about and answering a lot of questions. I want to my friend David, who always sends me challenging questions, and that's good. David says, why are you anti-insurance this morning? Let me, before we get too distracted on that, let me say, you know, I really appreciate my insurers. I appreciate my healthcare insurance. Boy, do I appreciate it right now. It's incredibly expensive, but at least they're required to do certain things that make that insurance good for me, and that's great because we have some regulations where those things are concerned, and we've gotten a little better with our insurance. We may take some steps backwards, but we got a little better with healthcare insurance. But let's talk about house insurance, because this is one thing I think we need to understand. House insurance has gotten very difficult along the Gulf Coast, and it's getting difficult inland too, and it will get more difficult, because when you have these big events, insurers simply don't want to underwrite policies. So, look, I hope you guys are aware that I know we're not supposed to talk about this out loud, but a lot of the insurance, most of the insurance companies have fled this market. I mean, fled is the word when it comes to wind damage. They are not prepared to underwrite the damage. And a lot of that damage, particularly when it comes to wind damage, forget the flood damage. That's an even bigger mess. But just the wind damage, they're not underwriting wind damage because there's so much damage done by trees. And so we've lost them. And the ones we have left, if you're getting new insurance, you basically got one insurer. Basically one. If you have an older house, you only have one. And that means there's no competition for, I mean, they can, and there's very little regulation. There's very little, there's not a lot holding their feet to the fire. And do you think they're going to, we got a problem where it comes to insurance, and we can't rely on insurance anymore to get us out of our house problems. We can rely on insurance for our cars as well as we can rely on it. We can rely on it for health insurance as well, but with houses, it's going downhill fast. And the reason I bring that up is because we've got to protect ourselves. And protecting ourselves is about understanding what's going on with the damage, what causes the damage, and how do we prevent it. And a huge percentage of that damage is from trees. And we can stop that damage. And that's why we talk about it. And that's why I think, you know, I could just sit here and talk about broccoli all day long. I love talking about broccoli. Well, maybe not all day long, but for a long time. And we could talk about cabbage the rest of the time. And then we could talk about collards and kales. And we could talk about zinnias or whatever else. Citrus, apples, whatever you want to talk about. But at some point, because we know something about trees, and because we have some people who can help us with those trees, and we know the trees are a big impediment to how we live on the Gulf Coast, and also one of our great assets of living on the Gulf Coast, we need to be clear about it, and we need to be smart about it. So, David, thank you for making me clarify that about the insurance. I hope I have. Probably only dug myself in further. Is that right, David? I often do. Josh asked me, I'm going to try my hand at garlic this year. And listen, this is your last chance. I would love for you guys to try garlic. It takes good soil. You need well-drained soil. You don't want it to be wet. And we can talk about how to prepare that soil and how to get there. We can do all of that. But you need to go ahead and order right now. You've kind of wasted a lot of time fiddling around. And this is the time we need to purchase the garlic for next year. I went and checked the other day. A lot of the garlic varieties that I would recommend to you and that I've recommended before and I've recommended to lots of other people, and consequently it sells out pretty quickly, believe it or not, some of it is sold out. But there are from Fillory Farms. Hey, Josh, listen. Fillory Farms, F-I-L-A-R-E-E, Fillory. Fillory Farms, go on the internet. You can get from them. They still have some good turbines. And the turbines I noticed that I think will do pretty well is Blossom and Lotus. They both have done very well for me, Blossom and Lotus. Two flowers. Garlic. One called Blossom, one called Lotus. They're in the turbine category. They will do very well. The others produce too late for us. Most of the other types of garlic produce too late. There are other turbine types that that do okay, but they're sold out for the most part. So I would recommend you try Blossom and Lotus, and then you call me back and let's talk about your beds and let's talk about how to get them done. But listen, you got to order them soon. They'll come in mid-October. There probably aren't many left, so you need to go ahead and order those now. It's one of those things we need to do a little bit earlier in the year. So Rusty is asking me, what are the pros and cons of digging up multiple stumps or just grinding the stumps into the ground? You know, it's not going to make a lot of difference, honestly. I would definitely not dig them up in general. Because you end up with a big hole, and you do a lot of damage to a lot of other things. And I think I would just grind them down. There is everybody's got some kind of weird recipe for making a stump deteriorate, and most of it is hocus pocus and not real. You basically want to keep that stump moist. One of the problems with water oak trunks, and one of the reasons why we want to get rid of water oaks as soon as we can, is that water oak trunks, no matter what you do, the stumps will be a reservoir for bad things. and if you take them out now, if you take them out later, it will be all in the root system. But they really are bad, famously bad, about holding in certain types of fungi. Yeah, so we do need to get rid of them as quickly as we can. I would say grind them out is the best way of doing it. I don't see digging them out, and be careful about taking that. When you grind a stump up, you're going to get a little mound. Don't think that mound is going to stay there. That mound is going to sink, and you want to keep most of that good material right there where it is. Don't want to move it around because you're going to get a big hole no matter what you do, but at least you'll have something to fill it with if you grind it. Boy, I'm starting to get lots of callers here. Let's try to get to some of these callers. Who is our first caller there? That's Jim. I'm listening.
Are you this
morning?
How are
you doing? Good. Hey, tell me, Jim, how did it look up in Atmore?
It's not that bad compared to Ivan and Dennis and in some ways even Frederick.
Yeah.
Even though Frederick didn't come that close to us, we were still on the strong side of the storm. And we got a lot of damage from Frederick. But as far as I know, everyone's power is restored. Most of us have water. We just don't happen to be one of them. And that's what I called about.
Yeah.
I have got a water line that comes up on the east side of the house. We also have a large magnolia tree that's right beside the house in between our house and the property line. And I was calling to see if you or if your other foresters are going to be, or not foresters, but the word won't come right at the moment. But anyway.
Yeah, arborist. Yeah, yeah.
If they're still coming, maybe you could run this past them and see if there's any way they can think of that I could mitigate this problem. Most of the trees that fall in this area fall from east to west. And the tree is within 20 feet of our house. It was planted many years ago, or either it was already there when the people built the house. And I hate to take it down, but it may be the only way to go if we're going to have a water line through it.
How far is the water line going to be from the tree?
At the most, maybe 20 feet.
Okay. Two thoughts.
I wanted to try to run it down the west side of the tree, which would mean it would be hugging the house, you know, the foundation of the house.
Yeah.
But I felt like going down no more than a foot, that it probably wouldn't do severe damage to the foundation, because it's actually, you can't tell it from the road, but it's actually a two-story house.
Yeah.
This is the lower story is earth sheltered on all but the south side.
Hold on, Jim. Let's come back. We've got to take a break, and
sure.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Oh, boy, am I glad we got that out of the way. Now we can get on to some better things. Hey, so this is good, this is good. Jim, are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah. So here's a couple of thoughts. Magnolias recover from, in general, magnolias recover from root damage better than a lot of other trees. And that's one of the reasons why I think they survive hurricanes. And the reason they do recover is they don't have a lot of finer roots. They really have a strong network of very fine roots. And if you've ever dug around a magnolia, you know that. I mean, you can't do anything without running into a magnolia root. And they're all, a lot of them are really small. And so they recover better than a lot of other trees. At 20 feet, I would say with a magnolia, you'll probably be mostly okay. They will recover. But let me tell you one other thing that you can do. This is not, 20 feet is not true for oaks. It's not true for live oaks. Maybe the best people can do sometimes, but it is not good enough. Magnolia is probably good enough. But one other thing you can do is jet that pipe, and a lot of people are jetting, just like you would jet it under a sidewalk. You can jet a hole for your pipe and run that pipe. You see what I'm saying, Jim?
I know what you're talking about, but I don't think the man that's doing the work is going to have access to anything like that. And I don't know and I haven't heard of anybody anywhere in this area that would do that sort of thing. I mean, sure, the highway department does it sometimes, but they're not going to come out and do a tree on private property. They'd be forbidden by law to do that.
So yeah,
how we would get that done. If you have any suggestions, I'll be glad to look into it.
Yeah, and I will. What I'll do is, one of the things, when I get Peter and Chris on, Chris will know. Chris is definitely coming on at 10, and so listen up around 10 if you can. About 10:15, and I'll ask, be the first thing I ask Chris. And but there are some groups who do that, and Chris may know somebody in your area who does that. It's not really a hard thing to do. I always thought, well, God, you know, must have really highly specialized equipment, and you know, it's just pretty standard stuff, really. You can almost do it with a pressure washer, but. You'd need a long tube and some other things to do it, but it's pretty easy to do. But let me just say, magnolias, recover much more quickly. And so if you can get the bulk of the, if you miss the bulk of the roots, I mean, you don't want to make a complete circle around it. it's better to put it in on the house side, all of that, if you can manage it. But at least with a magnolia, I can say you're going to have less of a problem. And 5 feet, that's bad. That could be really bad, because then you're getting into rot. 10 feet, that's pretty bad too. But if you can keep it out around 15 to 25 feet, and it's just on partially on one side, if it's just like a quarter of the root system, I think you'll be okay.
Well, I'm hoping to be able to run it beside the house, because the way the house is built, there's no way that the roots go beyond the house.
Right. Right.
Because
that's true of that
second story. And the actual true foundation of the house is, of course, is at the bottom, which is
right
probably 8 to 10 feet below the tree, so it's not going to have any roots that deep.
Right. And I'll tell you, Jim, on any modern house that's built on a slab, there's no roots under that slab. Really. There's no oxygen under there. The slab is poured too deep. So houses always serve as an impediment to roots. Now, in the old days, we would get roots under houses because houses were built on piers and curtain walls. If there was a little curtain wall, it was not very deep. But this is not the case with any kind of slab on grade house. You don't have roots under the house. And so that's a really smart thing to do. And you would avoid essentially any real significant damage to the magnolia if you did that.
Well, you answered one of my questions. I had thought of going out as far as we possibly could and then go down to the south of the tree and turn and come back and then angle back up toward the house, because the inlet for the water is right on the rear corner, just up from the corner of the house, which is on the west side. But if I made it, that would mean going a circle, kind of a semicircle, all the way around the tree.
I think that's worse. I think that's worse.
Making a straight line and
doing the best we could, I guess. Yeah, I think that's worse. You know,
and then you've got to come back toward the house, so you've got to cut roots from another direction.
Right. Right. So you don't want to do that. East, you know, I noticed you said that the trees fall east to west, and sometimes that happens, but you can't always be sure that that's what's going to happen.
Oh no, I could tell you lots of exceptions to that I have seen.
But the predominant, like in Ivan,
we had about 80 trees in our front yard, huge, what folks call bull pines around here, and all of them, but about, I don't know, about between 8 and 10 fell.
Yeah.
And every one of them fell from east to west. But when Dennis came through 7 months later, we did have some trees that fell north and south. But
right.
Dennis came up from the south and actually went directly over our home.
Right.
We had the eye right over where we live. And then some trees fell from north to south. But that was because of the way the winds came in.
Yeah, and that's right. And it will always depend on, we never know where the hurricane's going to come. Any hurricane that comes up over Mobile Bay, more than likely, or if it were to come up over Mobile and then move towards Atmore, you would get winds. You would have trees blowing down from west to east. And so it's...
That would be okay.
Yeah, that's right.
To the east of us, but
yeah,
you know, but just other trees.
Yeah, so it's, but no, I think running it next to the house, keeping it as far away from the tree as possible, and knowing that it is a magnolia and that one of its strengths is it has those smaller roots. And I'm gonna bring when Chris comes on, I'm gonna run all this by him and let him argue with me. But that's my view, and I think you'll be okay.
Well, I appreciate you taking my call, and I will listen, and I'll listen this evening too, and maybe even go back and pull it off of the internet later on just to make sure I didn't miss anything.
Jim, always good to hear from you.
Wait to hear what y'all have to say.
All right, great, thanks. Hey, we have another caller, Beverly. Have you held on? I hope you have.
We bought our 10 acres about 30 years ago.
Yes, ma'am.
And I planted from Auburn willow oaks coming up the drive. And we planted them about 50 feet apart. They were, we measured one, the circumference is 60 inches on the trunk. We lost 9 of them coming up the drive. We've lost a total of 31 trees coming up both of our drives because our drives are a quarter of a mile long. And the insurance company will pay for the trees that crossed over our driveway. So we've got 9 of those willow oaks down. And then a bunch of Leland cypress, which I'm glad those are down. But they'll pay for them because emergency vehicles can't get to the house.
Yeah, good.
So, but my question is, we had a perfect canopy. Some of them on the south came down. Mostly the willow oaks came down on the north. Is there anything we can do to try and make another canopy?
Yeah, don't use willow oaks.
Well, obviously now.
Yeah, and it's not... Willow oaks are not among the stronger windfirm trees, and particularly a lot of the willow oaks we buy are not from local populations, and I think they have even more problems than normal. And when willow oaks get big, they start deteriorating. They're not as bad as water oaks. Water oaks, we like to say, 25 years growing and 25 years dying. I would say with willow oaks, it's more like 50 years growing and 50 years dying. They're not long-lived in this environment, but they do grow fast. If you're going to use a red oak, I would recommend something with a little... I think Schumards are probably a little better. Probably Schumard. S-H-U-M-A-R-D. Schumard.
Oh, Schumard, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Schumard oaks are good, and they're easy to find. But here's what I would do. I think I would fill in with a white oak. White oaks last longer. They're generally more wind firm, and a white oak that we've had very good success with that does very well, and there's no guarantee if you have a really bad storm, but they're going to be good through most winds, and that oak is swamp chestnut oak.
Swamp. I never
heard of that. Yep, and Quercus Michaui, it's named for a guy named M-I-C-H-A-U-X, Andre Michaud, who came to the South a long time ago and identified trees for us in the 1700s. And so Michaui, if you see that M-I-C-H-A-U-X attached to the name, you know you got the right tree. Quercus Michaui, swamp chestnut oak. Not chestnut oak, not swamp oak, but swamp chestnut oak is a great tree and does very well. We're very happy with it. Okay. My dad, because
we've lost about 100 trees here, and I wanted to tell you I even lost longleaf pine and magnolia.
Yeah.
But we've lost a bunch.
Yeah, and you got hit pretty hard. And so it's, you lost a lot of trees for a lot of different reasons. Did they break off or did they go over from the roots?
They went over from the roots. I had planted them about 10 years ago. Then the magnolia was about 30 feet tall, and it was in the ground. I planted it about 20 years ago. So we lost quite a few trees.
Yeah. So I got to take a break, and this was getting fun. Hold on, Beverly. Let's come back in just a little bit and talk.
Okay.
if you don't mind. Can you hold on? Yeah.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Oh, yeah, listen. Let's get to this show right away. A couple of things that I probably need to follow up on. Michael Neal is asking me, I'm seeing a lot of my citrus seems to be prematurely ripening. Would this be from stress from the hurricane? No, in fact, it's probably from the cool weather. And we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. I'll try to talk a little bit more about that. Everything's going just fine. I think cool weather doesn't really, it increases the flavor. It doesn't actually increase the ripening any faster, but it does make the peel turn orange faster. Really weird little thing. We'll talk about it. It's going to confuse everybody this year because we're not used to it happening this quickly. But it's cool weather. And Michael also asked about flea beetles. And, Michael, you send me a text in the next hour, and let's be sure to talk about flea beetles. It's an interesting thing, and some other problems that are going to be coming up for a lot of people. Now, we got a lot of callers and a lot of things we want to do, so I'm going to get back to let's see. We were talking about those trees Beverly. You're talking about your trees. Beverly, I think a lot of what happens with longleaf, particularly planted longleaf, did you plant them as taller trees by chance?
No, they were in the grass stage.
In the grass stage, and they still came out of the ground.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's good to know. It's good to know. But they weren't tall enough to do a lot of severe damage, right? They were still pretty small.
No, well, they were about 20 feet tall, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
But, we lost 31 trees on our driveway. We lost probably 100. This property we bought only had 2 popcorn trees on it when we bought it, and I had planted about 400 trees here, so we've lost about a fourth of the trees.
Yeah. Was this an old pasture or anything, do you know?
It's an old dairy farm.
Dairy farm. So one of the things that happens, and this is really interesting, and this is why I wanted to engage in this conversation and listen to what you're telling me. I could have guessed that it was a pasture or a dairy farm. One of the things that happens is we do get a lot of there's a hard pan, and the roots aren't able to penetrate that. So we see a couple of things when we plant forests on old pastures, particularly if they've been really heavily trammeled and if they have a lot of nitrogen. And excess levels of phosphorus, which yours probably does because of all of the cows. And that is that trees are more vulnerable on those sites. There's a lot of questions as about what you should do about that. But as we come back, Beverly, I'm going to do a little bit of thinking and a little bit of research. And before you plant, I want you to call me back and let's talk about the situation. Let's talk about what maybe you should do, because those longleaf at that stage shouldn't have blown out of the ground. I suspect that there is a serious compaction going on in the soil beneath, and you may also have an excess nitrogen problem, which can be a problem for longleaf. Beverly, will you call me back and let's talk about that someday in the next few weeks?
Yes, all I've got is time. Time and a shovel and, need to go ahead and plant some other things.
All right, good. Let's talk about it because I think it's an interesting problem. And I want to think about it. I'm going to talk to Chris about it and some other folks. That's good.
So we've got lots of trees that are going to be coming out and big. Those little oaks were huge.
Yeah, they grow really fast, don't they?
And yes, they do. They were beautiful. But not anymore.
Yeah. I had some willow oaks in one of my old yards in North Alabama up around Anniston, and they were incredibly beautiful. I did not plant them. I inherited them. But they live longer up there, and they do better up there. But let's do better next time, and let's think about it really hard. So call me back in a couple of weeks, and let's figure this thing out.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Hey, Thomas, you've been listening and in for a long time waiting. Are you still there?
I'm here.
So tell me, you got those ruts. I know just what you mean.
I'm extremely grateful for the power company restoring my power quickly, but with the moist soil and all that, did create a few ruts, and I was just looking for the best way to try to save that area and get it back to normal.
Yeah, it's hard. It's tough. And, when dropping limbs when the soil is wet like this will create incredible compaction. And there are areas of my yard that suffered from it for a long time. What I do think, in general, you can fork those areas up. So you're going to have to effectively resod. You can try to let them repair themselves if you want, but effectively you're going to have to resod those areas or do something else there. But you want to use a fork. After all these years, I got smart and got myself a broad fork, which you can ask me about later. We'll talk about it later. But mostly I recommend to people just using a garden fork, a good, strong garden fork. Don't get a cheap one because it'll fall apart on you. But just wiggle it down into the soil, lean back, and just lift that soil up. You don't need to dig it. You don't want to turn it upside down. You just want to crack it. And that will relieve the compaction that has occurred below the surface. And it usually helps. But we're not going to have time to talk about it, but will you call me back sometime and let's talk about other techniques for breaking that up?
Sure.
Call me next week.
I sent you a picture. Like I said, it's really not that bad. It's just a couple of areas. Mainly right near the driveway. And I'd read a little bit about using a mixture of soil and fertilizer just to try to fill them in a little bit after pulling them up with a fork.
Yeah, you got to do that first, because if you simply put stuff on top of them, and I don't even know you need to fill them in, but if you simply put stuff on top of them without forking it up, you're going to get it's going to be a bathtub, and literally it'll just hold water there, which is the problem. Even if you fill it up with stuff, it's still going to hold water there because it's not going to seep in. So crack it is the idea. That's the word we use, not tilling, but crack it. Just crack it. Don't turn it upside down. And call me back next week, and I'll give you a little more information about the kinds of tools you can use to do that.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
All right. Amy, we're going to try this. We have no time. Amy, can you just hold on? I just can see a train wreck coming here with the news, and I don't want to put you on and then have to cut you off. So, Amy and a couple of more folks, hold on. We're going to be back.
The rain is falling through the mist of sorrow that surrounded me. The sun.